George Altkeld is here, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Jeff, he is in Omaha, and he says, I went to my chiropractor. I keep having cramps in my feet. He gave me a little adjustment and suggested I need, I'm low on potassium. What does George think about what he said? And if I were to take some, how could I take some without getting the other minerals out of balance? Great question.
Great question. Okay. Yes, being low in potassium will cause you to have cramps. But I'm also surprised that the doc didn't say anything about being low on magnesium. That's the number one thing that will cause leg cramps, foot cramps. Here's the problem with magnesium. Unless you have enough boron in your body, you are not going to retain your magnesium.
Okay.
It's going to exit your body as fast as you eat it until you get your boron levels back up.
And boron is not, if we are buying our organic vegetables from the hippie food store or even the farmer's market, do you think we're getting enough boron?
For the most part, you're not getting enough. In the old days when everybody ate big piles of greens at every meal, because boron naturally goes with magnesium in a plant's body.
Okay.
The two are pretty well balanced.
Okay.
But once you start to be low on boron, and let me tell you, your city water is taking it out because of the aluminum they're using in the water. The aluminum knocks out boron in your gut, and you can be very deficient in boron because of that aluminum compound they use to make the water clear.
What do you think about just having a little bit of a dash of 20 mule team borax every day? That's boron.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, and people have used that for a long time to get their boron levels back up. I myself would prefer to use the amino acid chelated form, and if you've got a boron supplement on your website, I'm sure that's what it is, and I would recommend that. If you don't have it, Twin Labs makes an excellent form of boron. And here's the good news about boron. Once you reach tissue saturation, you start excreting it. You're not going to poison yourself from too much boron.
Wow.
That's not going to happen.
Wow. So you think it's easier to get it that way rather than the 20 mule team?
You know, I can't answer that.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't read any literature, and I really do like to hang my hat on real science.
Yeah, you're a rare bird, real science. Is there any such thing as real science anymore, George?
Oh, yeah, it's out there, but you sure got to be aware of bogus science. One of the most quotable things I've heard lately is, for $100,000, you can use science to prove anything you want.
Yeah. Well, so maybe just a little pinch of boron in your water when you structure it or whatever you do, that might be. And you say you can't really OD on it; your body just excretes it.
Right. And it's so essential for retaining magnesium, and that could be where he's having the leg cramps and cramps. His complaint was foot cramps.
Foot cramps. So and you think it's magnesium more than potassium?
Well, I don't know. All three of these are implicated. And I used to could tell you what that third one was, but it was like potassium. And, you know, the thing you have to remember is, you know, potassium is basically orbiting around sodium for the sodium-potassium ion pump. Mm-hmm. Which is what keeps your cells clean and detoxed.
Yeah. George, have you heard of Dr. Thomas Cowan, C-O-W-A-N?
No, I haven't heard of him.
He's been on our show 3 or 4 times. He's written several books. He's out in San Francisco, and his whole contention is he's a big of talking and educating the idea that the heart is not a pump. The heart is really, the body does all the pumping, you know, with the electrical charge in between the veins, and that's where it all is happening, and the heart is just a ram pump. It only puts in what it puts out, you know.
It's actually regulating the pulse.
Yeah, that's right.
The whole vascular system continues that regulation.
Just like the sap going up the tree, right, up your legs.
Yes.
And so he's really cool, and we've had a lot of conversations with him, and he showed us things where if the arteries get a little bit clogged up, then the body in its infinite wisdom will start growing ancillary arteries and veins around to keep the body going. And if you don't allow the person to go in and crack your chest, you know, he said he could probably live for a long time with clogged up arteries, you know, the big ones. It's pretty fascinating.
Yes.
But anyway, so he got the idea. He thought, you know, we only eat about 10 different vegetables, right? Most of us.
Uh-huh.
And he said, we really need to eat more vegetables, different kinds.
Yeah.
So he is sourcing really finely grown vegetables, kind of a biodynamic Rudolf Steiner stuff. And he's got
Really?
Yeah. And so what he's doing is he's dehydrating them at a very low temperature. And he's got these powders that, George, they are the bomb. I mean, he's got greens and beet and turmeric that you smell this stuff and it's like, whoa.
Oh, man.
Yeah, really cool. Like if say you're having a baked potato, you can take a little teaspoon or a quarter teaspoon of the beets or the turmeric or he's got a carrots, leeks, you know, things like that. Burdock. Who's going to go out and cook burdock, right? Nobody. So these are really cool. And we've been promoting those on our website and they're just amazing.
Oh, you mean I can get them from you I go to your website?
Go to your website and check down Dr. Cowan's Garden, and there's about 20 or 30 different kinds. Like I say, burdock and turmeric, the leeks, beets. He's got some seaweed kind of stuff, and really cool. And, you know, all of these different, even in the dehydrated form, they all have different little unique probiotics that, like a broccoli or something doesn't have. Isn't that cool? Like the leek, they got some really they got some really unique probiotics. Cool, isn't it?
That's way cool. I'm glad to know that. I'm going to go to your website immediately. Yeah, I've been looking for something like that.
Yeah, get some of that. And, you know, just buy one at a time. They're kind of pricey, but they go a long way. I mean, and they're in Myron glass, you know. So, I mean, it's not like you're going to use a lot of it. I have about 15 of them. So I'll put them on pasta or I'll put them on fish or meat or vegetables or even in my oatmeal.
Can you put them in soup?
Or you put them in anything, yeah.
Oh.
Or, you know, if you're doing a smoothie, you could just dump some in there too, you know.
Right.
Yeah, really, really pretty fun. All kinds of different things. And boy, you know, those dark, he's got a beet formula, 3-beet powder, and you know what that does for the arteries and the veins and the strength? Whoo, man.
Yeah, it helps the endothelial lining excrete the nitrous oxide that causes you to have lower blood pressure.
Oh, I knew that.
Yeah.
What did you just say? George, where did you get this? What did you just say? Okay.
Okay, the reason why people get clogged arteries is because they lost the endothelial lining in their veins and arteries. And that's because the chronic vitamin C deficiency causes that.
Uh-huh.
And you can actually reverse that. It's called, it's the name, and the word scurvy is in there.
Scurvy.
Yeah, scurvy is the reason why you lose the endothelial lining. And if you don't get the vitamin C back and you leave the wall of the artery exposed,
mm-hmm.
the body panics. It says, hey, we can't have this. And so it starts piling on lipoprotein A. And when it runs out of that, it takes anything, basically road patch.
Oh, so then that's when the cholesterol and the calcium, they all do their thing.
All that starts to build up. Now, you can reverse that if you can get your vitamin C levels back up.
So how can we do that without just taking ascorbic acid? There's got to be some more natural ways, isn't there?
Well, the problem is volume.
Yeah.
And since about 20 million years ago, we lost the ability to make vitamin C out of sugar.
What?
Uh-huh.
What do you mean, like CNH pure cane sugar from Hawaii with a hula girl? That's not good?
You can't make it. Your liver doesn't have one enzyme that used to be used for making vitamin C out of sugar.
Really? What happened to
them? We don't know, but this is a common trait that we share with all other primates. You know, gorillas, chimpanzees, baboons, us, we don't make vitamin C anymore.
So you mean those gorillas sitting there chewing on leaves all day, they're not getting enough vitamin C?
They are. They're getting enough vitamin C. But we don't sit around chewing on leaves all day.
Well, speak for yourself. You know, that's what I do.
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot.
That's right. Speak for yourself. I'm Dripping Springs. That's all we got to do. Oh, that's interesting. So we lost some kind of liver enzyme, huh?
We did. Huh? And there are so few creatures that don't make vitamin C. I can name all of them. It's us, you know, the great apes. There's guinea pigs,
mm-hmm.
There's three species of fruit bats and one species of bird called a bulbul bird. Those are the only creatures that we know of on the entire face of the planet that can't make vitamin C.
What's up with that? Some kind of karmic evolutionary kind of wacko thing? Or what?
Well, normally, you know, we ate enough so that when we lost the enzyme, it wasn't critical. We didn't drop out of the gene pool.
Oh, what? We dropped out?
No. We were eating enough fresh green stuff that, you know, it didn't kill us to not be able to make our own.
Oh.
But, you know, rats make their own vitamin C. Dogs do. That's how they survive snake bite without any treatment whatsoever. Elephants make their own vitamin C. I mean, every creature does. And if you compensate for size and weight, they are all making about 3.5 grams, 3,500 milligrams of vitamin C a day. And this was all determined by a PhD cardiologist in Canada by the name of Dr. George Willis. He did all of his studies about the mid-50s. And he's the one that said, you know what, there's no need for cardiovascular disease. We could fix this whole problem by getting everybody to take enough vitamin C.
Like ascorbic acid kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm. Ascorbic acid.
Like potassiums. We like that potassium. No. What is it? Sodium ascorbate. Is that what it's
right.
called? Yeah.
Right.
Because
exactly.
It's kind of buffered. It's got a little baking soda in there.
Yeah, it's buffered. And if you mix it with food, even better.
So the body, it absorbs that okay.
Yeah, it'll absorb it just fine if you take it with food, and you can absorb it anyway. I mean, it's like, you know, the body will absorb what it needs, but 3.5 grams a day is what's required just for a 150-pound human being.
Well, and that's not a terrible amount, right? I mean, that's not, you don't have to take that many caps, do you?
No, I take about 8 grams a day. I get it at Wheatsville Co-op, 1 gram tablets, and they're easy to swallow.
Mm-hmm. So do you do the sodium ascorbate or do you just go for ascorbic acid?
Well, it's got rose hips in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
So isn't there a way that, don't they have some supplements where it's all rose hips and camu, but it's a volume thing. You can't get a lot, can you?
Well, yeah, you're not going to get the 3.5 grams that Willis discovered that's required to keep the endothelial lining from eroding away due to scurvy.
But I guess we're getting a lot with all the different greens on the dehydrated greens I'm eating, right? I'm getting, yeah.
Yeah, you are getting a lot of vitamin C. And the interesting thing about vitamin C, if you don't go past the boiling point of water, it's not destroyed.
Yeah, right.
It's intact.
Yeah. One of our listeners said, remind the people to mention to George that there's a discount for Dr. Thomas dehydrated vegetables for the first-time customers, which is Patrick. So if you, first timer, you get a 20% discount. It's a good deal if you use promo code Patrick. Thanks.
Okay.
A listener.
Okay.
Yeah, use Patrick. I think that's,
right.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, he's just got a new one come out. The reason I thought about it, it's called three beet powder made from dark red, Detroit, golden, and Chioga beets, all organic.
Right. Wow. Oh, and I'm so glad you mentioned the beets, Patrick.
Oh, man, beets are the bomb.
They are. Here's the interesting thing about beets.
Mm-hmm.
The pigment in beets corrects genetic damage.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So if the mouth-breathing Anunnaki came here a few thousand years ago and messed with my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather's gene thing, the beets are going to straighten it out?
I can't answer that one definitively. Again, I rely on lab reports.
Yeah, well, good luck with lab reports. Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, we've got alien discounts.
Yeah, we got alien discounts. So beets actually do what?
They correct genetic damage.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Now, I've heard that from two different molecular biologists.
Wow. Boy, this would be a good idea, folks, to get some of these beets from Dr. Cowan. Use promo code Patrick on your first buy, because, you know, we don't really spend that much time eating a lot of these other more eclectic vegetables, do we? I mean, how many people do you know that really eat beets on a regular basis? Not too many, right?
No, but, you know, lately, every person I've talked to says, I love beets.
Yeah, they're getting to it, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever done the mini beet protocol? Have you ever heard of that?
No, but that's, there's a gallbladder attack remedy made from beets, by the way.
Really, a gallbladder attack?
Yeah, you shred a fresh raw beet, shred it on a, you know, some kind of food grater, mix it with sesame oil.
Ooh.
And squeeze lemon juice on it and start with 1 teaspoon.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I was having a gallbladder attack and I couldn't move. And my landlady knew about that and she saved my life.
So why was your gallbladder attacking you?
I don't know, but you know, the interesting thing is that happened all over Austin.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it was
all over the place.
I think it was something that you got, something that was in the food or the water or something.
Or maybe the air. I don't know. It's pretty weird.
Probably the mouth-breathing Anunnaki, I would think. But, you know, I always blame it on them. Okay.
Hold on. Wait, 1 second.
Okay. Okay, we got to get some of these questions in. George is great to talk to, isn't he?
I'm back.
Okay. Okay, here's some questions. We got a lot of emails for you. If you have an email or question for George, get them in before we go. 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. I have so much fun talking to George when we have him on that we go around to all different places. So if we miss something that you are interested in, the best way to get an answer is to ask. Oh, I knew that. If part of an apartment is in an area with no direct sunlight after the early morning hours, is there any plants that can be planted and placed there in pots?
Well, sure. And, you know, what I didn't get to mention a while ago, and, of course, you know, again, you're going to need to know what are the light requirements of that plant.
Yeah.
And if you don't meet that requirement, get some artificial lighting that will produce the full spectrum that the plant needs. But the other thing that plants need is they need grounding. And all these experiments have been done where you take a copper wire,
mm-hmm.
you attach it to, you know, some kind of a steel post driven into the ground, and then you put the other end of the wire, you know, with a nail or something into the soil that the plant's being grown in. That's a supply of electrons, and it has a huge beneficial effect.
That's crazy. I've heard it for people, but not for plants.
Yeah, for plants too. And, you know, like for cut flowers, you can keep them from wilting. They'll last anywhere from twice as long to 5 times as long if you're supplying the electrons from the ground.
That's wild. So ground your plants.
Exactly. They want those electrons.
So on to this lady's question, she's just going to have to find out the light requirements for whatever and just make sure they get enough, and you're going to have to supply extra. Right, if you're not getting enough where they are.
Yes, you will have to do that. And I could tell you one of the signs that a plant's not getting enough light is if it starts to grow spindly and rapidly and the leaves are not reaching full size and the growing tip is starting to get really skinny.
Oh.
That's called etiolation, and it is an indication that there's not enough ultraviolet for that plant.
Christian has an email question for George Altgelt on this November 7 morning. What are the best and most nutritious types of grapes to plant in Zone 7B, and when should they be planted? Zone 7B, I wonder what that is. Do we know?
No, I don't know.
I'm going to Google it while you're thinking about grapes.
That sounds like our area down here. I thought we were 8. I thought we were in Zone 8.
What? Well, let's see. We're going to put where is Zone 7B, right? Is that what he said, 7B? Yeah, let's see. Let's see, Dr. Google knows this kind of stuff. USDA Plants Hardiness Zone Map. Click on that little puppy. Oh, man, just give me the thing. Don't. Oh, I see. Zone 7. Oh. It's up in Missouri, is that right? Is that possible?
Okay, so it is a little north of here.
Yeah, up in Missouri, it looks like, George.
Yeah, I think we're in Zone 8. But the real trick is to have that grape grafted onto the rootstock of Mustang grapes.
Mustang?
Because it turns out that's really good rootstock. And a lot of grapes are done that way these days, and especially, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Mustang grape from Texas is what saved the French wine industry. They had some kind of blight that got in there, and they started grafting their grapes onto Mustang grape rootstock, and that rootstock provided something in the sap that enabled the plant to resist whatever that blight was that got into their wine grapes.
Oregano Mustang grapes.
Right, and those grapes are lousy for eating.
Yeah.
They're so high in tannins, it'll pucker your lips.
But they're just kind of hardy, and that's why they, when you graft them together, they work good?
Right, right. It imparts that hardiness into the grape that you're trying to grow. And to answer your question, I don't know what would be the best grapes. You your county extension service may know. But
I know
that you can grow any kind of grape organically if you pay attention to the soil biota and also the biota living on the leaf itself. The Israelis have come up with all kinds of leaf biota to enable the grape to resist fungal attacks.
Wow.
And I have some right here. It's called Bionatural Nutrifoliar, and it's used on grape vines and grape leaves. It's a foliar nitrogen fixer, and it makes that grape really tough, and it's very difficult for a fungal attack. And you don't have to rely on, you know, so-called fungicides, which are very toxic and have a tendency to be cellular mutagens, something you don't want to expose yourself to.
No, I'm trying to cut down on cellular mutagens, man.
I think we should.
You know, I woke up this morning and said, man, I'm having way too many cellular mutagens. I just got to quit. I got to stop it.
Right.
As an experiment last summer, writes Carmen, I stuck a copper wire in a few of the tomato stems about 3 inches from the base of the plant, and they did thrive much better than the rest. Would this approach work with other plants in the vegetable garden? A copper wire in your tomato plants. What's up with that?
Sure. Well, that's supplying extra electrons. It's supplying it. I have a feeling she did this above ground. So the roots are supplying electrons, but the above ground wire is also supplying electrons. And that will be, enhancing the growth of that tomato plant.
Huh.
And for apartment dwellers who live on the 2nd, 3rd, and 51st floor of a building, you definitely want to get the plant grounded to, the ground pole on your wall plug. If it's properly grounded, is a great way to supply the electrons.
Yeah, I don't think it's the best choice as opposed to putting in the ground, but of course in an apartment you can't do that. So you can use the ground, which is the third little plug, right? And I think they have
exactly.
Things on the interweb, which Al Gore invented before he invented global warming, you know, that interweb. You can plug it in there, right? You can plug it into the socket, can't you? Into the wall socket, and then you got a ground, and you can, I guess you could put out some wires and just put them in your plants.
Sure.
Couldn't you?
Sure. You could.
Yeah.
And Patrick, I'm so glad you mentioned global warming.
Well, you know, I was trying to cut down on global warming.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, you know, if you're a biologist and you're in the biological circles and you're talking to people who understand, a lot of things beyond whatever gets presented on television.
Oh, you mean it's not true what's on TV? Oh, George, don't tell me that. That's the only thing I can count on.
Well, here's the one thing that I do want all of our listeners to know. You could, CO2 in the atmosphere is supposed to be the number one cause of global warming.
Yes,
it certainly is a contributing factor, and I'm not discounting that by any means. But you could sequester, as in stash, the extra carbon that's in the atmosphere. You could stash enough of it that you could bring the CO2 levels back down to where they were in 1840. That's pre-industrial revolution.
Okay.
You could do it in 3 to 5 years, as much as 15 years, you could do it. And you could do it with carbon sequestration into the arable land that we're using right now.
So you're saying, if you wanted to, and we're not sure that this carbon is even a problem, but just say it is, okay? Go with that for a minute. You could say there's a way to get rid of it all in 3 to 5 years by what?
by sequestering it back into soil, which is basically where it came from before we started this whole business with salt-based chemical fertilizers.
Uh-huh.
You know, those worked really well in the beginning because we had such a bank of carbon in the soil, and it got used up. And now we don't have that bank of carbon in the soil. We could restore it, and we could do it every time we grow a crop of anything.
How do
but
we do
you've
that?
You have to start using ecological methods of farming, and heaven forbid that should happen. I'm just joking, of course. I'm being
silly. I understand.
Yes, I'm being silly. We actually need to go back to that. But you could bring CO2 levels back down to where they were in as little as 5 years.
So when we do it ecologically, organic agriculture, it actually sucks the carbon back in?
Right, and this is what the microbes use. These microbes depend on that carbon in the soil as a platform for basically living areas.
Hmm.
It's a staging area for everything they do.
Really?
This is why, remember we talked about lignin coming out of the back end of that cow whenever she's consuming grass?
Mm-hmm.
That lignin is used by the microbes as a staging area or as home or a shelter because it doesn't go away. And it starts rebuilding soil.
So why doesn't the, you know, classic soybeans and all the stuff, canola and all this stuff, you know, just thousands of millions of acres grown in this country, corn and wheat, not organically, why doesn't that suck the carbon back in? Does that actually throw the carbon out?
Oh, it has a lot to do with the fact that soils are now so dead that they're not able to digest the carbon and put it back into the soil.
Oh.
Soils are now so dead that it's nearly impossible to get corn stalks to decompose back into the soil. In fact, they've started burning corn stalks because they won't decompose. And that is releasing biochemicalized, you know, hydrochemicalized glyphosate into the atmosphere, and we don't know what it's doing, but it's causing everybody to be part of this big experiment of how much glyphosate can we absorb before it actually starts to affect us. And one of the things that we know that glyphosate does is it starts shutting down your kidneys.
Yeah. So
anyway,
are you conjecturing that maybe that the NPK farming beginning, say, let's just round it off to 1950, and starting to get the sulfur out and all this stuff, it could be contributing to the fact that there's more CO2 in the air?
Oh, sure.
Oh,
sure.
Sure, he says. Like, sure, really.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
how come Al Gore didn't mention that?
You know, I often wonder about that. Quite often there is no, rational, full-spectrum discussion of a problem when you're dealing with a television show or something in print in a newspaper.
Yeah, nothing's like, going on, right?
So much is excluded from the discussion that it's like, I can't stand it. I can't stand look at a newspaper article because of all the things they're leaving out.
Yeah, it's just pretty much all fake news, boy.
And it's frustrating because we are not, you know, that stupid. And, of course, they always say this in journalism. You need to be writing your article as though everyone had no education above the fourth grade.
Hmm.
Well, they've been saying that now for about 80 years. And it's like, well, wait a minute. I think we do have an education above the fourth grade.
I think we do. Well, George, as you know, there's just so many competing interest in this culture, money and power. It's like, it's bonkers, you know. I mean, to get a guy like you up into a Senate panel or something to explain these kinds of things about the neo-Nicks or the, you know, I mean, it'd be the bomb, you know. It's just, but it's probably not going to happen unless we, I don't know, angels run for Congress, you know.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, that would be nice.
That's right.
As I told my son, I said, if anyone ever asks you any questions about aliens, because they want to, you know, they want to make sure they can, you know, get you sectioned off into the crackpot section, all you need to really say is, I have no objection to aliens as long as they adequately represent the voters who put them in office.
Oh, I like it. Please ask George what he thinks about using salt marsh hay as a garden fertilizer and as a mulch.
Okay. I don't have any experience with salt marsh hay.
I wonder what that is, salt marsh hay.
I don't know. Maybe it's grown with brackish water and it has a high salt content.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to be careful with that. I sell a condensed salt water fertilizer. It's liquid, and it has had the salt removed.
So you
the NaCl is taken out, but all the trace minerals are left behind.
Pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, so you're not going to poison the ground with salt. But as a salt marsh hay, I don't know about those. So, you know, unless I can see some data or tell me where to go on the Internet and I'll find something intelligent out there about it. It sounds pretty promising.
Mm-hmm. George, is there a real challenge we have with the glyphosate, GMO, neonics and all this with the alfalfa that even the grass-fed people sometimes have to supplement with? Is that a problem?
Well, here's the deal with alfalfa. It is normally a weed suppressor, and people who grow alfalfa don't really have a problem with weeds, so there was no real given reason to make Roundup Ready alfalfa, because anybody growing alfalfa, the weeds have been gone for decades from that field. Because, you know, alfalfa, being a legume, has a tendency to be a weed suppressor. You know, peanuts, same thing. Peanuts are a wonderful forage crop for cattle. And once you start growing peanuts, the forage kind, the weeds are gone. It chokes them out.
Hmm.
So Roundup Ready alfalfa was simply done because now you can sell seeds for it, and it will cross-contaminate other alfalfa. And because Monsanto won that case, you know, at the Supreme Court level, they can now claim your crop, even though it was their pollen that contaminated your crop.
Well, that was a good decision. That was well done.
Justice Clarence Thomas is the one who was the deciding vote on that historic case. Who, by the way, worked for Monsanto about 15 years prior to that and should have refused to be on the jury. That's called, he should have recused himself,
all right.
And didn't do it, and nobody called him on it.
Hmm.
Anyway, no, there's no reason to have Roundup Ready alfalfa, and I don't know why anyone would spray Roundup on alfalfa, even if it was Roundup Ready, because there's no real weed problem with alfalfa.
So it's not a big problem as you know it.
Not as I know it, but there is a problem with alfalfa per se. Being a legume, it's very high in estrogen, and estrogen can be a problem for cattle if they don't have anything else to eat. And that, you know, that's a problem with all legumes if you're talking about the diet of cattle.
Yeah, and of course cattle ranchers have that issue sometime, depending on the weather, right? Sometimes we get these droughts, and they don't have any more grass. Where's it?
Right, exactly. And then it's, you know, they'll have to strictly use alfalfa hay because nothing else is available.
Hmm.
And it's an irrigated crop. That's another reason why they grow alfalfa in the same spot year after year after year, is because those big circular irrigation systems, that's how they keep it watered.
George, can you stick around a few more minutes? We got some more emails. We're almost done.
Sure.
Okay. George Alkout, isn't he the bomb? He's the best. You can look at his website, no matter where you are, just for fun, and get a feeling for what George is up to, geogrowers.net. He's in Dripping Springs, Texas, just down the road a piece. As we say here, if you have not tried our aloe, I'm going to get my new shipment in today. Oh, boy, I am loving this product. This is fresh aloe that the Stockton Aloe Company down in Florida, they just fillet the aloe, and it's a certain brand, or not brand, what's the term, kind of genre, species of aloe that's one of the most healing aloe out there that this fellow Stockton figured out many, many, many years ago. So this is a kind of the aloe genre that they use. There's some Latin name to it. I'll have to get that. So what they do is they just fillet it, and then they freeze it in these containers, and they're 58-ounce containers, and you can get a minimum of two if you click on the long horizontal ad just under our slideshow on the front page of One Radio Network. It'll take you right to their link, and the minimum is two, and they package these up really nicely, and they'll come in frozen in a little styrofoam thing. And the last time I got two, I had originally started with 4 gallons, and that was really cool. And I had 9 half-gallon containers. Great. Anyway, so I've been burnt through those. I got two more. So I got two more arriving today. My body and my tummy really, I mean, just aloe is, it's got ormus gold in it. Ken Rolla says it's got all kinds of minerals, just so healing for the body. And there's nothing in here, no chemicals, no fertilizer. It's not been pasteurized. I mean, no adjuvants, nothing. It's just pure aloe. And you can imagine, I mean, how much aloe you'd have to grow to get a half gallon of pulp and juice. A lot, right? But so you're going to have a lot. You'll have fun with this. It'll come in, probably be maybe 8 to 10 ounces that are thawed when it comes into you. You just pour that off into a little mason jar, put a lid on it, put that in the fridge, and drink that in 3 or 4 days. They say a week, but I like to drink in 3 or 4 days. And boy, it's got that bitter, really lot of juice to it, man. It's just like, it's really good, very strong. And you get used to it, and you just love the bitterness, and the liver loves it. Liver loves the aloe. Your face loves it, your hair loves it, everything. And of course, your whole digestive system from your mouth all the way down to your bum loves aloe because it's soothing and cooling. And folks with acid reflux, heartburn, that kind of stuff, aloe will actually help to rebalance the whole acid alkaline thing in your tummy. It's really cool. It's Stockton Aloe right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
Awesome health can no longer be attained from food alone. Since the advent of chemical agriculture in 1945, U.S. soils have become progressively more demineralized and infertile. Human health has correspondingly declined. To reverse this trend and to even have a chance at feeling great requires sophisticated supplementation to make up for what is not in our foods. When our bodies are mineral deficient, they require more protein. We suggest you begin with One World Whey. One World Whey is a new and improved protein power food. Our technological enhancement yields us a whey protein that produces phenomenal results. All case histories indicate that your body functions in a more youthful manner. One World Whey not only supports detoxification, building of lean muscle, and immunity, it strongly supports your energy and sense of well-being. One World Whey tastes delicious and comes in single servings. You can click on the One World Whey banner ad and order right here at OneRadioNetwork.com. That's OneRadioNetwork.com.
Daniel Vitalis is here, and we're talking about his new product, Taboo, that really has short-term and long-term effects on the libido and the whole sexual experience.
We really wanted to redefine the category. You know, we wanted something that worked in the short term that would help increase the blood flow to our erectile tissue, the penis, the vagina, the clitoris, the nipples. We wanted something that would increase blood flow to that erectile tissue, but we also wanted something that would work on the long term, helping to increase sex hormone in both men and women to give people a better quality of sex life over time as well. And we wanted to do that in a formula that tasted delicious. In other words, we wanted something that when you tasted it, you kind of wanted to take another dose. And we achieved all three of those things. It's delicious. It works tonight, and then it works over the course of time as well. So this is a really great investment in your sex life and something that you and your lover are going to really enjoy sharing together.
Well, okay, then. Sounds like a plan. If you're interested, you can get Taboo and all Sir Thrival products on sale right now, 10% off through November 7th. Just use promo code ONERADIO for this new product, Taboo, and all Surthrival products. You can order right now any Surthrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
I was riding shotgun with my hair undone in the front seat of his car. He's got a one-hand bail on the steering wheel, the other on my heart. I look around, turn the radio down, he says, baby, it's something wrong. I say nothing, I was just thinking how we don't have a song. And he says, our song is a slamming screen door, sneaking out it, tapping on your window when we're on the phone and you talk real slow, 'cause it's late and your mama don't know. Our song
is good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Okay, it's November 7, 2017. George Altgeld, he's a good one. Cellular molecular biology, University of Texas, and knows a lot about a lot of stuff. How do you remember all this stuff, George? Do you take special food for your brain? You have brain food or anything like that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there's the phosphatidylserine.
Yeah.
And then there's a number of memory-enhancing products out there.
But you can't remember them, I understand.
Well, B12.
I'm just kidding.
Lecithin. Lecithin helps an old rat learn a new trick.
No kidding. An old rat.
Yeah. Yeah, they can run mazes as good as the young'uns.
When they give them B12.
No,
I mean, lecithin. I'll be doing. But what's our favorite kind? Well, we like sunflower lecithin, non-soy?
Nowadays, yeah, because it's non-GMO.
Right, non-GMO. I think Whole Foods is close. George, the beginning of the year to have all the GMO stuff labeled. They said in 2018. So that'd be a good thing, right?
Yeah, yeah. They still got quite a lot of, canola oil that's not labeled non-GMO.
Man.
And I wish, you know, I'd like, they are slowly having more non-GMO canola oil out there.
Is there such a thing?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Percy Schmeiser, who spent
his
life.
Yeah, we know Percy, yeah. We interviewed Percy a few years ago.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was, you know, went all the way to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Probably cost him every dime he had.
Yeah.
And then the Supreme Court didn't rule in either one of them's favor, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, they didn't want to mess with it, right?
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, the pollen blows everywhere, and it could be GMO or not. And there are ways for testing for that, by the way. You can determine that. Just Google it. You know, you can find your lab that can tell you if that's GMO oil or not.
But even the label, if it says organic canola oil, which a lot of the products do at the hippie food store, I don't know why Whole Foods allows that stuff, because it's just not good anyway, even if it was organic. Is it canola oil?
No, canola oil is really a thin oil. It's like corn oil or...
Yeah, PUFA. It's a real... It's one of the worst polyunsaturated fatty acids, right?
Yeah, and what keeps getting neglected is you need saturated fat.
Yeah, you think?
It's part of the cell wall makeup. You know, what's in between those two layers of collagen is both kinds of fat, saturated fat and unsaturated fat, and you need both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, they you know, come out with, you know, oh, this has been going on for decades now. You polyunsaturated this and that, and it's like not a good idea.
Not a good idea. But boy, you're right, though. Whole Foods and all, you know, not, I just don't pick on them, but Trader, you know, all the organic stores, they're just loaded with canola oil and all these different, things. And yeah, it's a lot. I don't like to mess with it myself. It's just.
Yeah.
Reno writes in for George, I purchased 44 cubic yards of compost, wow, peat moss, topsoil, mushroom mix, dumped in a field. My question is, I am am I wasting time and effort by tarping to protect the pile from the rain and wind, which may cause depletion of any minerals, nourishment present in compost? The wind and rain this year is a challenge indeed, running out of rocks. And this person lives up in Ontario, Canada. Wow.
Well, I'd say tarping is a good idea because if it dries out, a lot of it's going to blow away. But you want to make sure that you're not cutting it off totally from air,
mm-hmm.
because the lack of oxygen will cause the microbial populations to shift over to anaerobic microbial populations. They're fermenters, and the bioproducts of fermentation, at least in soil, are quite toxic to plants.
Wow.
So you're going to need to make sure that you uncover that, turn it, and then cover it back up, because you want to keep your air-breathing microbes alive and well. Those are the aerobic ones.
So you just treat it like a compost pile and keep it turned and happy. And
right, mm-hmm. right. But, you know, he's right. He could lose a lot of material, wind blowing it away. But it won't really demineralize. That's not going to happen. And even the leaching of minerals downward, you're going to enhance the soil fertility right where the pile is. That's not a problem either.
Leon's in Florida. He says, if George were going to take a product to get all of the trace minerals, if we put it on a water, what would he choose? Good question.
Okay, you mean if you're going to put it underwater?
In their drinking water, you know, just to get their trace minerals.
Oh, well, there's a lot of trace mineral supplements out there.
What are some of your favorites?
Well, the easiest to use and the quickest to get your hands on would be real salt from Utah.
Uh-huh.
Or Himalayan salt. That's another good pink salt.
Mm-hmm.
Just add some to your water. All the trace minerals are there.
Mm-hmm.
You need the salt anyway.
Sure.
You know, the television tries to convince people that salt is bad. And they're leaving out to any discussion of trace minerals that should come with salt. Sea salt has trace minerals. Salt dome salt, like the salt from Utah and the Himalayas, those have trace minerals. And besides that, the sodium that's in salt, or, you know, not junk salt. I'm not talking about junk salt. I'm talking about real salt.
Real salt.
The sodium is part of the sodium ion pump. The chlorine is how you make hydrochloric acid so you can maintain an acid enough environment to actually get the minerals out of your food when you eat food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, let's see. On the phone, who's this? Good morning.
Hi, this is Gary from Wyoming.
Gary in Wyoming. How are things up there in Wyoming? You guys doing winter? Are you doing winter yet?
Oh, man, it came early. It's pretty cold.
Yeah.
Hey, I had a question for George. Yeah. I have a fairly high clay, high pH soil, but I've been interested in, like, magnetic sand such as magnetite as maybe just as a soil improvement. I mean, I use other stuff, but I was just wondering how much, I mean, I have about a 3,000-square-foot garden, and I was just wondering how much, say, magnetite, how much would I need to actually maybe see a difference?
Okay, I don't know about magnetite, but if you're trying to get that soil to loosen, two things will work in your favor. One is organic matter, and the other is gypsum, which is a form of calcium that's ionically bonded with sulfur.
Huh.
It's calcium sulfate, and that will take the charge off of those tiny little clay particles that stick so tightly to each other that they've become a tight soil. And is your problem one of not enough drainage?
Well, somewhat, yeah. And I do use some of that along with many other soil amendments. But I just thought there might be something magic from what I read about magnetic sands in your soil.
Well, I don't have any experience with that, and I'm going to tell you straight up, I don't know, but I would get some and experiment with it and see what happens.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, I thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
Okay.
Gypsum's kind of an interesting thing, gypsum.
It is.
There's actually an Ayurvedic product out there for the stomach that I took from my Ayurvedic doctor. That's gypsum. Gypsum. I wonder why that would be good for the tummy.
Well, I do know that it's ionic, and the sulfur, of course, is very necessary. And the way it works in soil, this is something I do know a little bit about, it takes a static charge off of those tiny little particles that make up clay. And once the charge is gone, they don't stick so tightly to each other.
Huh.
And that's what allows for drainage through soil.
Hmm. Very interesting. Okay, a couple more here. Could one grow enough food for one person in an apartment with a deck? I've been trying to figure out what can be done using a sprout grower and one or two other types of planters. Or I guess better question is, what are the most efficient growing methods for small spaces?
Well, yeah, you're going to need to be out on the balcony. You're going to need some direct sunlight. And if you're wondering, can you grow enough food to live on, I want you to look inside your refrigerator and see what it is you eat, and then determine what it takes to produce those foods.
Mm-hmm.
And I can guarantee you that's a real eye-opener.
Well, yeah, I tried to grow pizza one time. I just couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah. dairy products require land. I mean, we are so totally dependent on agriculture, and the awareness has just dropped away in the last century of what it takes to actually sustain a human being.
Yeah, yeah, boy. We are really dependent on just-in-time trucks coming to the, you know, the back of the Whole Foods or the HEBs, right? And,
right.
Kroger's, yeah. Boy, and those trucks stop for one day and they're out of food.
I know. And you're right, it is the just-in-time delivery system that's got us way out on a limb.
You think?
Yeah. In fact, that's one of the things that's one of my most grave concerns is, you know, what would happen if you had a solar mass ejection and it knocked out, you know, computers, especially computer systems for motor transport? Boy, we could be hurting really quick. And solar mass ejections are real. And they can be very damaging. I mean, a big, heavy solar mass ejection could knock out your transformers. Something really big like that occurred in 1878, and people got up at 3 a.m. because the sky was so lit up with aurora borealis.
Whoa.
In California that they thought it was morning. And, you know, and that was just one little tiny incident of people not knowing what this mass ejection could do.
But this was a kind of a natural phenomenon, not precipitated by some rogue nation throwing up a nuke up in the sky.
Yeah, not that. Just what comes out of the sun every so often.
Whoops. Whoops. It's like, whoops.
Yeah, whoops.
What was it, late 1800s that happened, right?
Yeah, it was. And what they discovered in the process was telegraph didn't work unless you disconnected the telegraph wires from the battery. And then it was the stream of particles going past the wire that was generating enough current you could actually use the telegraph system, but you had to disconnect it from the batteries.
So it didn't fry it.
It didn't fry it. But, of course, that's heavy, hard wire.
Yeah.
And, you know, magnetism. If you're talking about computer chips, that, you know, it's like there's so many things that can go wrong because it's all so delicate and it all is, you know, tiny, tiny little pieces of electricity that are being used.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're vulnerable. And it scares me to really think about it for very long.
Well, you know, that's why they invented scotch, George. I'm just kidding. Okay. Can George speak to the use of wood ash being applied to a vegetable garden?
Sure.
And at what rate? Dr. Joe Wallach has often said that after Edison threw the switch, the U.S. health decline started because people were no longer putting wood ash in their gardens. Of course, this did not all happen at once, but rivers were being dammed up for power production, which stopped lowland flooding, for the most part, stopping these lands from getting the minerals needed for the good plant production, which left the vegetables and grasses lacking the mulch needed, the minerals needed for human and animal health. Are there some veggies more accepting of higher levels of wood ash? And there are other amendments that should be used with wood ash applications. Wow, that's from John.
Okay, the first thing I want to say about the wood ash is you have to remember that wood ash is extremely alkaline.
Yeah.
It has a pH, 12.5, 13, I think 14 is the very end of the spectrum.
It's pretty alkaline. Wow, that's pretty alkaline.
Yeah, and so if you have an acid soil, yeah, it can be well tolerated. But if you're starting out with alkaline soil, you're going to have some difficulties. It could be all too easy to use too much wood ash.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm really paying attention to soil pH is because a plant's ability to absorb trace minerals declines as the soil becomes more alkaline.
Oh. Just say that again.
Okay. The plants that you're trying to grow, garden plants, their ability to absorb trace minerals declines as the soil becomes more alkaline. And I want to give you an example of that.
Yeah.
Copper, which is so necessary. Remember, we were talking about copper. Copper is the foundation of the polyphenolic esterase, and that's how you build everything from tree bark to pigments in the fruit. Okay, copper is the first trace mineral to drop out of absorption when soil becomes alkaline. So you're paying attention to that. Now, for mature plants that are secreting carbon dioxide around their roots, they're re-acidifying the surrounding soil. They can do that. But a young plant, let's say a young tree, it can't do that because it's not big enough. It's not really putting out enough carbon dioxide to make carbonic acid to make the soil change to yield trace minerals. So you have to be very careful with that.
George, if we take, I used to know some kind of combo. I bet you know it. You could take a couple cups of soil, a couple cups of water, and get a soup and then take the pH of that.
Yeah, you can do that.
Is that how you do it?
Yeah, and in my store, I sell that kind of a little lab test, I suppose.
Okay.
But I don't use that because, I'm going to go to a lab.
You're going to send it to the local extension center in your area?
Well, in my area, you would have two choices. One would be Texas A&M, and the other would be the Texas Plant and Soil Lab, and I don't use A&M because their reagents are hydrochloric acid, and plants don't excrete hydrochloric acid.
We don't like that. Now you've given this.
You're going to get skewed readings.
Yeah, you've given this this website before, and this is something that anybody around the country can use. Texas Plant and Soil Labs, right?
That's right.
And they're pretty reasonable, and they'll give you a lot of information about your soil, and you can go on their website and check them out.
Yes, definitely do that.
Just Google Texas Plant and Soil Labs. So if you had a good pH meter and you were just mixing the soil and the water and make a soup, could you get close to what you have?
I think you could.
Yeah.
I spent, $500-$600 on good pH meters.
Yeah,
But you have to recalibrate them.
Right,
Because you want to make sure that you're getting the correct reading. And I just ran out of time. I can't be recalibrating something every time I want to know the pH.
That's right, yes.
I just send that sample in, and they'll make sure that you get a really accurate notion of what the pH of that soil is.
Mm-hmm. Ken Rolla, and we have Ken on the show on the third Monday, he's got some pH testing stuff very on the cheap on freshandalive.com. Click on the Golden Pyramid on One Radio Network, the Tesla scalar energy thing, the Golden Pyramid we promote, and you can try that. He said it's not like, to the bomb accuracy of a pH meter, but he said to get you pretty darn close because he's checked it, with a good pH meter. If you want to test the pH of your water and stuff like that, he said you're pretty close. So does it work the same way? And the reason why we don't want to drink alkaline water all the time in the body, or not? Same principle?
I you know, I drink alkaline water every chance I get.
Do
but,
you?
You know, it depends on what's making it alkaline. You know, I wish I could tell you more about it. That's not something I've studied. But, you know, when you ask me that question, how do I remember all this stuff?
Hmm.
I remember it by reviewing the information quite often.
I see. You go back and, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and since I haven't studied that and I don't have any stuff to review, I cannot speak to that issue at all.
In general, isn't minerals the reason why the water gets more alkaline?
In general, yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, you want to keep the body alkaline on the inside and acid on the outside.
Because I know, like, my rainwater, for example, which has no minerals, right? You put a TDS meter on that sucker, it's, what, 7? Which is...
Should be.
Zero, you know, I mean, practically zero. And it's the pH about 5.5, so it's pretty acid water.
The rainwater is.
Yeah, the rainwater, yeah.
Yeah, it's because it's got something dissolved in it, and it could be that it went through a lightning storm and it absorbed nitrogen.
Yeah, kissed by angels, right?
Yeah, yeah, or it could have other stuff in it. They're finding a lot of barium these days in rainwater, which is odd. There should be no source of barium, but it's in there, and that's something you want to watch out for because the barium will take out the selenium in your gut, and you need selenium to help you fight viruses. It's also a powerful anti-cancer mineral, so you don't want to be taking the selenium out of your system just because there's barium in your water.
So if I use these big overload carbon filters and then distill it, that should get rid of yuck stuff, right?
Yes, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what we do. And then we structure it up a little bit after we distill it. What are some ways to increase the airflow within the soil? It seems that for my raised beds, the soil gets more compacted over the growing season. With a compacted soil, it's hard for the soil to retain water after watering.
Yes, and that's such a good question.
Yes.
The first thing that you want to keep in mind is the gas molecules exchanging in and out of soil is totally dependent on changes in barometric pressure.
Hmm.
That's how soil breathes. You know, low pressure, all these gases are exiting. And that's good, because a lot of it is stuff that the soil really doesn't want. High pressure comes, and this can happen within a few hours.
Hmm.
Now, fresh air is being pushed back into the soil, and how deeply it penetrates is always a function of how fluffy that soil is. You want soil to have loft. So one of the first things you can do, no matter what, is don't walk in your garden unless it's a designated spot for you to put your foot. But the best thing you can do is to make sure your soil is loaded with enough lignin. You can do that with composts, and there are drawbacks to using compost year after year after year, and I don't recommend it. But once you've got enough lignin in there, you should be able to maintain soil fluffiness, or what's called loft.
Loft. So a compost is a good source of lignin?
A cow compost is.
Oh, moo cow.
Yeah, chicken manure. I mean, the composted chicken manure has almost no lignin, and it's not going to really contribute to fluffiness. And you can wind up with too much phosphorus and oftentimes too much potassium from using a compost year after year. You want to check on that because, you know, you don't want plants to be too high in potassium. That's not healthful for you or the plants. So there's a limit to how many times you can use composted anything because of that potassium buildup. Now, if you've got a heavy crop coming out of there all the time, you're probably not going to run into that. But if you're just kind of like minimally getting vegetables out of your vegetable garden, you could have too much potassium, and you want to check on that. And that's where a soil test at a reputable lab would come in handy.
Here's an email. Two more to go, then we'll let you go back to work, George. Although us humans don't produce vitamin C, an emailer says, as most animals, here's a study I'm including that we do have a kind of a backup mechanism that gets at us extra mileage from C we consume our bodies can recycle vitamin C while most animals cannot. Have you ever heard of that?
Well, I hadn't heard that we could recycle vitamin C, but I do know that's how you recycle quite a few antioxidants with vitamin C.
So if you get it in there, it probably runs around a little bit.
Yeah, I'd like to know where to go to get that information.
Yeah, I can send it to you. What's your email, George?
It is geogrowers@austin.rr.com.
geogrowers@austin.rr.com. Yeah, I'll send you this this email, and he's got a link right here. He says also, if Morley Robbins is correct, pretty smart guy we think, but who knows, we should avoid long-term consumption of ascorbic acid because it inhibits ceruloplasmin, leading to copper dysregulation. The whole vitamin C molecule is preferred instead.
Well, I can see the truth of that.
Would you? That makes sense to you?
Sure.
Well, we could just kind of live on oranges. That works, right?
Well, yeah, as long as we got enough bees to pollinate the oranges down there in the orange groves, we could lose enough bees we wouldn't see oranges.
Boy, I've been looking for oranges, organic oranges, for a month, and there's nothing out there, man. It's just like, man, not sure what's up with that.
I'd sure appreciate that email that you just got.
Yeah, I'm going to send that to you, George. Yeah.
That is a problem with vitamin C. You can, if you're undermining your copper.
Okay.
If you're deregulating copper, that could be a real problem because you've got to have copper to make strong collagen, just like you've got to have vitamin C to make strong collagen.
I drive along Aggie Land crop fields. Can you tell me why they grow cotton in one field one year and then rotate to sorghum the next? Here's a Texas girl, I think.
Right. Well, when we were kids growing up, we noticed that we did that too. Sorghum one year, cotton the next. And it's basically following the principles of crop rotation, which, and nobody knew this back then, but you're actually enhancing the microbial populations by rotating crops. You cease to favor one group of microbes over another. You're definitely keeping a mixed bag, but the reasons why crop rotation back then, and this is what seemed to be common knowledge, is there were different minerals taken out for different crops.
Mm-hmm.
And you were giving the mineral absorption for a specific crop a rest by growing something else on it the next year.
My Uncle Vito, was a farmer, and he always had a problem because he used to rotate his crops when they're half grown. He never did figure that out. He said, Vito, wait till they're... He says, oh, God. Okay, for homemade mulch on a farm, I chop up straw, old leaves, and pine needles. Good to lay on the ground during the winter here in Nebraska for my garden? Okay. So she's on a farm. She's got some straw, some leaves, some pine needles. Is that good to lay on the winter garden? Yeah, we need to do that before we go. Folks around the country, what can they put on? So this will tie right into that question. What can they put on their garden like now to get ready for spring?
Well, that is a good thing to do.
You think so, the straw and the leaves and the pine needles?
Right. In nature, you don't see bare ground.
No.
Only if it's been disturbed or overgrazed or some kind of, calamity has befallen a patch of ground will you see it bare or naked.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is very, very good about, being the responsible steward and mulching has everything to do with the fact that you're creating this zone between the mulch and the soil where bacteria of every stripe have a tendency to survive and thrive. And that's the zone. Victor Schauberger, a scientist who studied a lot of this sort of thing, said that he called that the cold zone. Cold, C-O-L-D, the cold zone. And it was so necessary for that interface to exist, and it was a it was a place where the microbial life could re-inoculate the soil, and the soil could inoculate the mulch. And, you know, a lot of stuff's going on in there, and he alluded to it, but it was almost as though it were something magical or mystical. And he always said you needed to maintain that cold zone with mulch between soil and the sky. The mulch gets in there and creates a very hospitable place for enhancing soil life.
Well done. Finally, George, you know, we talked about the buffalo, and how many million did you say we had here?
You know, I know it was millions, and I thought it was somewhere between 27 million and 40 million, but someone else may have much more accurate figures than I do.
Whoa.
But it was millions and millions.
What happened to them all?
Well, they decided they could starve the Native Americans out by killing all the buffalo, and so they would hire sharpshooters to come and fire guns from the trains. And they even had signs up that said, open the window before you start shooting. But these guys would, you know, they were buffalo hunters, and they would have 50 caliber, you know, a lot of them were muzzle loaders, and they would just shoot as the train went through that area, which was unbelievably insane to the American Native Americans, Lakota and every other tribe you want to name, because they were just shooting them. They weren't even going and cutting the tongues out for this most prized piece of
that
food.
Breaks your heart to the people who are that brain dead to do that. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So this is the whole idea. They wanted to starve the Indians out, huh?
That's it. You know, you weren't doing it fast enough with blankets that were laced with smallpox, so we got to starve them too while we're at it.
Boy, you talk about bad karma, man. Phew.
Yeah, you know, interestingly, my mother took great issue with the anti-Native American sentiment that she said was still in the newspapers when she was growing up.
And what year is this?
She was born in 1925. And it's like, you know, I picked that up from her, but she, you know, she made very few comments about it, but it's like, that was one of the things that really made her mad about newspapers when she was growing up, is it was still this anti-sentiment with regard to Native Americans.
Boy, what we did to those people, it's just unconscionable.
Yeah.
You know, Marlon Brando was really concerned and really wanted to get information and education about what, you know, what we did to the Indians, you know, this country. And I saw an interview. He's, you know, he's really an intellectual guy, very deep dude. I mean, I liked him a lot when you hear him talk. And, you know, he said that he's tried for 10, this is when he's still living, he's tried for 10 years to get a really good, accurate movie made about what happened to the Indians, and just couldn't get it made. Even with all his money and power, couldn't get it made.
Right.
Yeah. Of course, today, if you got enough money, just make it yourself and distribute it. Back then, they couldn't. You know, they had such a stranglehold on it. But boy, that'd be a movie to make, wouldn't it, George? Who?
Sure. And if you want to see what's happening in modern times, a movie that just came out was called Wind River.
Wind River?
Yeah. It's about Native Americans on reservations. And it's got one of my favorite Native American stars in it. The guy who played the medicine man in Dances with Wolves.
Oh, yeah, I like him. I remember that.
Graham Greene.
One of my great favorite movies, Dances with Wolves. Wasn't that a great movie, Dances with Wolves?
Yeah, well, he's in it. And this is definitely a movie you want to see.
Do you think it's
so
good?
Do you think it's
accurate?
Well, it's about modern times. And, yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Oh, I see it here, Wind River 2017.
Wind River, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, Jeremy Renner, I like, he's a great actor. Elizabeth Olsen, John Bernthal, Julia Jones, Kirby Crow, James Jordan, Tattoo Cardinal, Matthew Del Negro, Graham Greene, Martin Shum. Graham Greene's the guy you like, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Got some good reviews. Boy, I just put that in my queue. Thanks for that tip, man. I'm
sure. I
want to watch that. Green, what's it called? Wind River.
Yeah.
Well, George, You're the bomb, dude. Thanks a lot for being here, man. We had such fun. 2.5 hours, George. Holy cow.
I know.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, I'll say.
Well, thanks so much for your information. It was just great having you here.
It was a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me to be on your show.
It's our pleasure, sir. George Altgeld, and it's geogrowers.net if you'd like to look at his website. He's in beautiful downtown, well, not quite, outside of Dripping Springs, Texas. George, my best to you and your staff, and I'm sure we'll be seeing you real soon.
Thank you. Yes, we will.
Okay, may the blessings be, George.
You bet.
Okay. Well, I love you all very much. Thanks for everything. Great questions. We'll get this show up here in the next hour or so, so you can pass this along to everybody that you care about. Great information. And Andrew Goss will be here tomorrow. Now, there's a chance we're going to do a follow-up show with Dr. Phillips on the whole mouth biome thing that I've been doing for 3 months. If we get the latest DNA test in, we're going to do it. But I'll tell you, the preliminary things that I found out at Dr. Nunley's office yesterday was really positive. So you want to listen for this. If we don't do it Thursday, we'll do it next week. But maybe it'll happen on Thursday.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.